You are listening to 93.3 FM WNRB LP Wausau. Free people, free radio. Coming up next, a show the NSA always loves to listen into, and stop tapping my phones. This is The Mike Cannon Show.
Warning. The views expressed on The Mike Cannon Show, or the segments brought to you on this indie media radio show, do not necessarily reflect the views of WNRB nor WNRB's hosts.
Guess who's back again.
Mike Cannon.
This is my boomstick!
This could be dangerous. You should go back.
I know you're out there. I can feel it now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change.
Governor Palin, you've cited Alaska's proximity to Russia as part of your foreign policy experience. What did you mean by that?
I personally believe that U.S. Alaskans are unable to do so because some people out there in our nation don't have maps, and I believe that our foreign relations, like such as in Russia and Canada and elsewhere, like such as, and I believe they should, the policy over there in the U.S. should help the U.S. or should help Alaska and should help the Russian and Canada countries so we're able to help build up our future for our children.
Right. We'll be right back.
Proximity to Russia as part of your foreign policy experience. What did you mean by that?
That Alaska has a very narrow maritime border between a foreign country, Russia, and on our other side, the land boundary that we have with Canada. It's funny that a comment like that was kind of made to, reporters.
Mocked.
Yeah, mocked, I guess that's the word, yeah.
Well, explain to me why that enhances your foreign policy credentials.
Well, it certainly does, because our next door neighbors are foreign countries. They're in the state that I am the executive of. And
have you ever been
in
involved with any negotiations, for example, with the Russians?
We have trade missions back and forth. We do. It's very important when you consider even national security issues with Russia, as Putin rears his head and comes into the airspace of the United States of America. Where do they go? It's Alaska. It's just right over the border. It is from Alaska that we send those out to make sure that an eye is being kept on this very powerful nation, Russia, because they are right there. They are right next to our state.
Wow.
And now, the only radio commentator not addicted to illegal pain medication, nor Viagra, Mike Cannon.
That's right. Unlike Rush, I'm your only non-Oxycontin and Viagra-free radio host, Mike Cannon. Each and every Monday for over 2 years now, the Mike Cannon Show has been bringing you alternative non-corporate news and information big business does not want you to know about. The Mike Cannon Show is a fully independent radio format with no corporate advertising or sponsors, and therefore is not controlled by the six mega corporations that control 80 to 95% of all television, print, and radio airways around the world. If you like comfy, sanitized information, if you like it spoon-fed to you by some corporate handlers, then this is not the place for you. If you appreciate alternative, raw, and unfiltered news, then this is your home. Just a reminder that this Mike Cannon Show is produced for other not-for-profit, community, and micropower radio use worldwide. Much of the shows I bring you and items I produce for the radio world can be found at radioforall.net, which acts as a kind of clearinghouse for us independent, not-for-profit radio producers. Radioforall.net is also a place you can find and download the first hour of my show each and every week. That is radio, followed by the numeral 4, then all.net. Radioforall.net. We are going to go right into the show this week with what I bring you each and every week about this time, a shotgun approach with a lot of shorter 2 to 6 minute segments you've come to know and love, including Media Minutes, Radio Spin, Women's E! News, This Week in Radical History, and Peak Oil Check-In, to name a few. First, we'll be starting out this week with Eat the State, and between segments, a little bit of goofiness here and there. Thanks for taking some time out of your schedule to listen to this labor of love, The Mike Cannon Show, indie media radio for Central Wisconsin, normally heard every Monday from 2 to 6. Thanks for listening.
You take the blue pill, the story ends,
You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Heads up!
Governor Palin, you had agreed to cooperate with the Troopergate investigation, which is why you weren't subpoenaed, but now you've announced that you refuse to speak with investigators?
That's right, I did, because I learned from the best. Checks and balances are for suckers. Why cooperate with investigators when you can just ignore them? Now, am I right, or am I right, or am I right?
Damn right you're right. You go, girl!
There's a reason the McCain campaign keeps Governor Sarah Palin away from the press. I want to play an excerpt from an interview that Palin did with the CBS Evening News anchor Katie Couric, where she was asked about the bailout package. Listen to this.
Why isn't it better, Governor Palin, to spend $700 billion helping middle-class families who are struggling with health care, housing, gas, and groceries? Allow them to spend more and put more money into the economy instead of helping these big financial institutions that played a role in creating this mess.
That's why I say I, like every American I'm speaking with, we're ill about this position that we have been put in, where it is the taxpayers looking to bail out. But ultimately, what the bailout does is help those who are concerned about the health care reform that is needed to help shore up our economy, it's got to be all about job creation, too, shoring up our economy and putting it back on the right track. So health care reform and reducing taxes and reining in spending has got to accompany tax reductions and tax relief for Americans. And trade, we've got to see trade as opportunity, not as a competitive, scary thing, but 1 in 5 jobs being created in the trade sector today. We've got to look at that as more opportunity. All those things under the umbrella of job creation. This bailout is a part of that.
Did you get that? If John McCain wins, this woman will be one 72-year-old's heartbeat away from being president of the United States.
You are listening to Mind Over Matters here on KEXP. It is 8:32. We have with us live in the studios once again John Parrish and Maria Tomczyk, both with you at the state. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
The whole housing crisis has bubbled up to become a banking crisis. And now we've got the federal government talking about a bailout. The question, of course, on everybody's mind this week is a bailout really needed? Some folks say yes, and those who are in particular connected to the banking industry say, yes, 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 bail us out, please. And that includes the Fed chairman, Ben Bernanke, who comes right out of the banking industry with his work experience, and the Treasury Secretary, Henry Paulson, who came from Goldman Sachs. These guys would love to see a bailout of the banking industry.
Particularly because they'll be back, or particularly Paulson will be back in the banking industry in another 3 or 4 months.
Oh, yeah, yeah, as soon as Bush is out of office. So, yeah, these guys would love to see a bailout of the banking industry that would help them and their friends. But a week has passed now, and the rest of us have been looking at the economy. And really, the sky hasn't fallen. The credit markets have not collapsed. The economy itself has not come crashing down. And some things are a little bit clearer now, a week after the crisis first, hit. What we're seeing now is that banks that have failed or are on the verge of failing, and that includes Washington Mutual and Wachovia, which is under talks to maybe be bought out sometime in the next week or two. These banks are ones that are in trouble for a reason. It's not because they have managed their assets wisely or that they have a lot of depositors. It's because they have made risky loans and they've done things that they shouldn't have been doing. And when Washington Mutual failed, sure, a lot of people were unhappy the first day. And now a day or two later, we're starting to see that, well, now that the dust is clearing a little bit, it's maybe not a bad thing, necessarily. Sure, shareholders lost everything. Well, you could argue that shareholders who got enormous profits off of their Washington Mutual stock while it was making all these risky investments probably should have known that there was something, that there was a large amount of risk attached to that, those high profits. And when you take that kind of risk, you got to expect the possibility of a failure and that you're going to lose the complete value of your holding. So I don't have a lot of sympathy for shareholders who are saying, please do the bailout so that you can save our investments in these big banks. Washington, Wachovia, which is in some trouble because its stock price is falling precipitously, is in trouble because Wachovia made big bets on these on mortgage-backed securities, and they issued a lot of risky mortgages as well. So, you know, they're in trouble for a reason. What we're seeing now, too, is that the money market funds that were in trouble last week weren't in trouble, not because they were money market funds and because the economy was on the verge of collapse and the credit markets were on the verge of collapse. They were in trouble because those money market funds catered particularly to big institutional investors like these big banks who needed the cash right away, and because these money market funds made extremely risky investments by violating their own investment their own safe investment policies and loading up on huge amounts of risky debt.
So let me be clear about this. What you're saying then is that the free market is working.
No, what I'm saying is that the guys who got us into this kind of problem, who are having the most trouble, the banks that are having the most trouble are the ones who should pay for the crisis that they've caused. At this point, giving a bailout to the top guys at the top of the pyramid is only going to encourage more risky behavior. So if you pour money in at the top to try to free up credit so that credit will be cheap again and they can loan out the same way they were loaning out 2 years ago, you're going to just compound the problem and make it worse. It's just basically putting off the collapse and perhaps making the eventual collapse even worse. And what we're seeing right now is with Washington Mutual depositors and Washington Mutual people who have mortgages through Washington Mutual, et cetera, nothing's really changed. Nothing has really changed for them. What's changed is the situation for Washington Mutual executives and Washington Mutual shareholders. And a good argument can be made for the fact that they're the ones who should be taking the brunt of the problem. And we shouldn't be jumping in to bail them out. And I also want to say, too, that there's a big argument being made that, well, credit markets froze last week, therefore we need to inject money into the system at the top to keep the credit markets going and to keep money available at cheap interest rates. And there's definitely an argument to be made that, no, you don't want to do that, that, in fact, credit markets didn't actually freeze, that many companies were still able to borrow money last week. It was just these big banks that were in trouble that were having problems borrowing. Also, there's an argument being made to support the bailout that says, well, homeowners are having trouble borrowing money to refinance and home buyers are having trouble borrowing money to buy properties, particularly properties that, you know, the price has fallen and we need to get the market going again to prop up the prices, et cetera. Well, no, there's an equally compelling argument to be made that, well, no, things are just settling back to the way they should have been, which is in order to get a mortgage loan, you needed to have a down payment and you needed to have a good credit history. Those kind of folks can still get a mortgage in this environment. In this climate, pre-bailout. And I would argue, and I think a lot of people would argue, that's the way it should be. You know, you shouldn't be making credit available to anybody who wants it, regardless of their personal finances. You shouldn't make it so easy for people who have already borrowed too much to borrow more, because that is just going to compound the problem. So, and there's an argument to be made that if we go through with the bailout, that is what would happen. That, okay, you take people who already borrowed too much and allow them to refinance and borrow more. Or, what you would be doing is be allowing more people to jump into the housing market, and that would, people who don't have a down payment and don't have good credit, and, you'd be increasing your pool of buyers, and therefore prices on housing would go back up to, unsustainable levels. And that's not necessarily a good thing. So the question, of course, is after making these arguments making the argument for and the argument against, and you can see who would benefit from a bailout would be these big banks and businesses as well who, you know, another argument made for the bailout is we have to free up credit and make more money available so that businesses that borrow money for their day-to-day operations can still get loans cheaply and quickly. And that's becoming a problem. That's really, I think, what they refer to when they say credit markets have seized up, that businesses in other industries are having trouble borrowing money for their day-to-day operations. And there's an equally compelling argument to be made that, well, businesses who have to borrow money for their day-to-day operations are not being operated in a responsible manner. And that those that don't have decent cash savings or don't have the income stream to fund their day-to-day operations and then only borrow in order to make capital purchases, those businesses who can't follow that model should be allowed to fail. So that's a very compelling argument to be made.
Tomchik, the economic Dr. Laura.
Right. So now that we see who would benefit from a bailout, basically banks that have made risky investments, the shareholders that own stock in those companies, and the businesses that have been hooked on debt and doing the same thing that people who borrowed too much to buy houses that were too expensive for them, some businesses have done the same thing. Those are the folks who would benefit from a bailout. Who would not benefit? Well, taxpayers. Definitely would not benefit. And the reason why, I just want to describe what that bailout would look like. The actual mechanism for buying these mortgage-backed securities, basically, it would be through an auction. The way an auction typically works is someone has something to sell. There's a multitude of people who want to buy. And the seller sets a price at which they want the bidding to start, and then whoever bids the highest price gets to buy the item, right? In the auction that the Treasury Department and the Fed are talking about, what would happen is you would have a multitude of sellers and one buyer. And the one buyer is the federal government. And what the federal government would do is they would say, okay, we would set a high price for these securities, not the low bargain basement price that at which they're valued right now, but we would set a relatively high price, and we would see how many sellers want to sell at that price. And then we would set the point a little bit, we'd set the price a little bit lower and see how many sellers still want to sell at that price, et cetera, until we get the number of securities we want to buy, and then we buy at that price. Well, to me, that sounds like you're allowing the sellers to set the price. And whenever a seller is allowed to set the price and the buyer has no idea what they're buying, that's a situation rife for abuse. And it means you could be, for example, buying a whole bunch of securities at $5 a pop from a whole bunch of different banks, and you could end up with a lot of stuff that's really worth about 5 cents each.
Not to mention in that scenario that the seller sets the price knowing how much the buyer intends to buy.
Yeah, knowing how many of the security the buyer intends to buy. So it's rife for manipulation and abuse. In addition, banks know exactly what they're selling. We assume that banks know what kind of stuff they'd be selling, but the federal government would have no idea until the securities are bought and paid for and they've held them for a while. They wouldn't know whether they got junk or good stuff. And in addition, a question that nobody is asking that has to be asked is, what is the federal government going to do with homes that go through the foreclosure process? Right now, banks, which have these mortgage lenders who have some experience handling foreclosures, are having a hard time keeping up. And there are plenty of houses sitting vacant and deteriorating because banks can't keep up with the high number of foreclosures. What is the federal government going to do? And do taxpayers want to take on that burden and that expense of keeping up homes that are going through the foreclosure process? So that's a question that's not being asked that needs to be asked. So what we really need to do is we need to ask, what would the economy look like if we didn't go through this bailout? And one of the big scary scenarios that the Fed and the Treasury keep saying is, oh, look, we could look like Japan after they went through their economic recession. I just want to ask Job, because he's been to Japan recently. What does Japan look like right now, Job?
Very prosperous. Why do you ask?
Because
the trains all run. They have public transit. They have very good infrastructure. People have a pretty good quality of life.
People have a high savings rate.
People have a high savings rate. There's a lot of jobs. And they
good health.
Actually, the healthcare system is excellent.
Yeah.
And people don't have to worry about it because it's, of course, like every other westernized country except ours, it's taken care of by the federal government.
Yeah, so rather than bailing out their failing companies in the 80s when their recession hit, the federal government put money towards more important things.
It's actually the early and even mid 90s.
Yeah,
it was more recent than that.
Yeah, and we can look to Europe too, who is going through a similar banking crisis, and the crisis in the European Union, and European governments have said, no, we're not going to bail out our banking industry. And I have to say that Europe is no third world country. You know, I mean, it is possible to say no to these kinds of things.
And in fact, not only is Europe not a third world country, but it is the preferred investment destination for international investors at this point.
At this point.
Because they manage their economy much more responsibly than the United States has.
Yeah. And in addition, this bailout would not be managing the economy. It is government intervention in the worst kind of way. There are different ways to do it. You can do it after the fact, which is what we're doing right now, or you can do government intervention when it's most important to do it, which is before the problem occurs, and that would be government intervention in the form of regulations, which have been largely removed from the financial industry in this country. We need to reintroduce those regulations. I also want to point out very quickly that the bailout could affect U.S. credit rating, the U.S. government's own credit rating. And this is an important point because the U.S. government has made it a policy to press other governments around the world to not bail out their own companies and their own banking industries, et cetera, when they've hit crises. And that happened in 1997 when the Asian financial crisis hit. The U.S. pressed Asian governments to not bail out companies, and Asian governments complied. They didn't bail out companies. They went through a period of pain, and they have recovered. And now they're watching what's going on here in the U.S., and they're saying, hey, we hold the vast majority of U.S. government debt, you know, is held by Asian investors and Asian banks and Asian governments. And they're saying, what the heck are they doing? They're bailing out companies. Does that mean that U.S. government debt is not a good buy? You know, and if you have foreign investors who hold the vast majority of U.S. government debt saying, we don't think it's a good deal, then you're really talking about potential economic problems here in this country. So what do
and the loss of valuation of the dollar too? That's
right,
also tied into
and
all this.
That's a very big problem. And so what do we need to do? People have been calling in massive numbers their representatives, particularly Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, the Democrats and the Democratic leaders of the House and the Senate, to say no bailout plan. And I just want to emphasize that if those calls drop off, then the Democratic leaders will think, oh, people are becoming resigned to the idea of a bailout. They're going to try to work out a plan in the next 2 days. And I just want to emphasize, if you have called them in the past to say no bailout, call them again today and call them again tomorrow and keep calling. And if you haven't called them yet and you think they shouldn't do a bailout, call them. Definitely. To let them know, because now is the time. And you won't get another chance to tell them what you think.
Operators are standing by. All right. Anything else on that?
No, let's move on.
All right. Let's jump to international and developments this week in Pakistan.
Yeah. Amidst all the hand-wringing that was going on over the economic crisis, some really very important things were happening in Pakistan this week. First was early this week when there was a bombing that killed several dozen people at the downtown Marriott in Pakistan. This is significant for several reasons. One, it was pushed back by the militants in probably in the northwest part of the country for recent attacks against them, both by U.S. forces and by Pakistani forces, demonstrating for the first time that they can really strike at any time they want, anywhere that they want, even into the heart of the establishment of Pakistan. Secondly, the significance of the target, the Marriott Hotel in Islamabad, is really the place where foreign diplomats, ambassadors, trade delegations, foreign business leaders, and so forth stay and hang out and meet. It was well known for this throughout Pakistani society.
society. That building is now destroyed and several dozen people dead. This is a real crisis of legitimacy for the new Pakistani government. At the same time, you had that government essentially at war with the United States this week. On Wednesday, a U.S. drone crossed the border into Pakistan, crashed. The Pakistani government claims that the army and civilians in the area shot it down. The United States is saying, no, no, it crashed. Not that the United States Army would ever lie about things like this. And the following day, you had shots exchanged between a U.S. Army patrol that Pakistan said crossed the border, and Pakistani army installments at the border, who would be in a position to know where the border was. So this is something that the two governments are trying to defuse, but those orders are still there by the Pakistani government to shoot upon entry. And we saw last night in the presidential debates, Barack Obama had many good things to say, but one of the more troubling things that he had to say was, and John McCain, I suspect, would behave no differently, was, yeah, we're going to go into Pakistan. This is setting us up for a very serious escalation of the war on terror that that nobody's really talking about, whether it's appropriate or not. So so this is very, very much something to keep our eye on.
I think that it makes sense for us to present ourselves before the American people to talk about the nature of the problems that we're having in our financial system, to talk about how it relates to our global standing in the world, what implications it has for our national security, how it relates to critical questions like the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. And, you know, obviously, if it turns out that we need to be in Washington, we've both got big planes. We've painted our slogans on the sides of them. They can get us from Washington, D.C. to Mississippi fairly quickly.
The last thing we need in these delicate negotiations is an injection of presidential politics.
The party is over. The party is over for this compensation for CEOs who take the golden parachute as they drive their companies into the ground. The party is over for the disparity in our country between CEOs making almost immoral salaries. The party is over.
We need to be focused on
becoming more precarious by the day. That's it. I face the choice.
But I think it is also important that the American
becoming more precarious by the day. That's it. I face the choice.
Moving the economy forward. I believe that we should consider
becoming more precarious by the day. That's it. I face the choice.
The party is over.
I'm a strong believer in free enterprise, so my natural instinct is to oppose government intervention. I believe companies that make bad decisions should be allowed to go out of business, but these are not normal circumstances. The market is not functioning properly. There's been a widespread loss of confidence, and major sectors of America's financial system are at risk of shutting down. Tonight, the government's top economic experts warn that without immediate action by Congress, America could slip into a financial panic. A stressing scenario would unfold. More banks could fail, including some in your community. Stock market would drop even more. The value of your home could plummet. Closures would rise dramatically. And if you own a business or a farm, you would find it harder and more expensive to get credit. More businesses would close their doors. The market is not functioning properly. The market is not functioning properly. The market is not functioning properly. The country could experience a long and painful recession. Citizens, we must not let this happen. I know that an economic rescue package will present a tough vote for many members of Congress. It is difficult to pass a bill that commits so much of the taxpayers' hard-earned money, pay the cost of excesses on Wall Street. In the situation we are facing,
yeah,
not passing a bill now would cost these Americans much more. How would a rescue plan work, including mortgage-backed securities, now clogging the financial system? This would free banks to resume the flow of credit to American families with the participation of financial institutions, large and small. It should make certain that failed executives do not receive a windfall from your tax dollars. Close consultation with Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson, Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke, and SEC Chairman Chris Cox. The market is not functioning properly. The market is not functioning properly, protecting your financial system. Banks to resume the flow of credit to American families. The market is not functioning properly. The market is not functioning properly. The market is not functioning.
The Mike Cannon Show, normally heard Mondays from 2 to 6.
My thanks to Mike Cannon at WNRB in Wausau, Wisconsin, who rebroadcast World Report.
Welcome to Media Minutes. Welcome to the weekly radio spin, a look at the stories behind the news, brought to you by the Center.
Peak Oil Check-In, exploring the end of the age of cheap oil.
Women's E-News, weekly summary of news about women, women's issues, and from women's perspectives. From the weekly Cheers...
This week in radical history for the week of April 7th.
My name is Scooter, and this is the Inner Side radio program.
This week in Palestine, the service of the International Middle East Media Center.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out on WNRB, Wausau, Wisconsin.
All these programs and more can be heard each week on the Mike Cannon Indie Media Radio Show, normally heard every Monday from 2 to 6 p.m., right here on Central Wisconsin's only non-corporate, commercial-free community radio station, 93.3 WNRB LP, Wausau. Free people, free radio.
Women's E-News, weekly summary of news about women, women's issues, and from women's perspectives. From the weekly Cheers and Jeers column of September 27, 2008. I'm Sandy Billings. Let's start with the good news. Cheers! Women are giving more. Women are on track to triple their political giving in 2008 compared to year 2000. This jump is spurred by three decades of income gains, which have fattened women's paychecks by 60%. So far, women have given $200 million to Democratic presidential hopeful Senator Barack Obama, and they've given $109 million to his GOP opponent, Senator John McCain. Women donated $120 million to Senator Hillary Clinton's bid for the Democratic nomination. With all that, women still represent just under a third of all campaign contributions, but in other categories of civic generosity, philanthropy, and donations, women have surpassed men for the first time. This comes from 2005 federal tax data that put women's gifts at $21.7 billion and men's at $16.8 billion. More news to cheer this week. Diane Schroer won her sex discrimination case against the Library of Congress. The library argued that federal law did not protect Schroer as a transgender woman. Schroer applied for the job as a male, then disclosed that she would transition to a woman after she was hired. A Malian woman received a second shot at asylum in the United States when Attorney General Michael Mukasey ordered a mid-level federal court to reconsider the case based on female genital mutilation. U.S. immigration courts rule on 40,000 cases per year, but the Attorney General has weighed in only 3 times in 3 years. Title IX has not caused the elimination of women's sports teams, according to analysis of collegiate athletics by the Women's Sports Foundation. The study partly blames unrestrained spending on the most lucrative sports, mostly football and men's basketball, for causing cutbacks in other programs. New regulations require Chinese police to respond to the scene of all complaints of domestic violence. The 8th annual Brides March in New York on September 26th, organized by the New York Latinas Against Violence, continued to memorialize the 1999 wedding day murder of Gladys Ricart. A September 29 concert at the Times Center in New York will feature a program of music entirely composed by living U.S. women. And now for the downside, jeers for news that women die in childbirth. 500,000 women continue to die in pregnancy or childbirth every year, while another 10 to 15 million sustain injuries during delivery. Maternal mortality is the largest health inequity in the world, according to UNICEF. A woman in Niger faces a 1 in 7 chance of dying from childbirth-related causes, while a woman in Sweden's risk is 1 in 17,400. In addition, 334,000 midwives could reduce the number of women dying in pregnancy and childbirth worldwide by 75%, this according to the World Health Organization. In a bright spot, the United Nations Population Fund has pledged $9 million to improve access to midwives in 11 countries in Africa that have high maternal mortality rates. More news to jeer this week. Declines in U.S. abortion rates mask the problem of unintended pregnancy among women of color and women with lower incomes. Abortion rates dropped by a third between 1980 and 2004, reaching the lowest level since 1974. But amid that, the abortion rate for black women was 5 times higher than for white women, and Latina women had a rate 3 times higher. 60% of women who had abortions already had children. TV star Alec Baldwin is promoting the debunked theory of parental alienation syndrome in a new book called A Promise to Ourselves. The book is about his bitter custody dispute with actress Kim Basinger. The parental alienation argument is often used to award custody to fathers and away from battered women who have accused the father of family violence. Proponents of the alienation syndrome argue that mothers are making the abuse claims only as leverage in custody battles. Acute poverty in central Uganda is causing more girls to be sold into early marriage and prostitution. In Wasiko District, 30% of school children have STDs, 60% suffer abuse, and 30% of dropouts from school are after pregnancies or early marriage. This, according to a study by Concern for Children and Women Empowerment, an advocacy group. In the United Arab Emirates, almost 40% of women are employed compared with 92% of men. Many women seek jobs abroad, which widens the gender gap in workforce participation, according to the Ministry of Labor. Researchers found cancer-related chemicals in the blood and urine samples of 20 teenage girls from across America. While those teens in the study used many cosmetics that included the potentially harmful ingredients, the tests also indicated the presence of many other potentially dangerous chemicals. The ingredients in common cosmetics impact hormones and could cause cancer or other health problems. In memoriam, Nancy Hicks Maynard, the first African-American woman to own a major daily U.S. newspaper, died September 21 from organ failure in Los Angeles. She was 61. Maynard also co-founded the Robert C. Maynard Institute for Journalism Education to train minority reporters and encourage newsrooms across the country to diversify their staffs and reporting. She and her husband took over the Oakland Tribune in 1983, then sold it in 1992. Quote, "She was fearless, always very optimistic also about what could be achieved," her former colleague Steve Montale told the paper. Mary Garber, known as Miss Mary to colleagues, died at age 92 in Winston-Salem, North Carolina on September 21st. She is the only woman to win sports journalism's highest honor, the Red Smith Award, and is believed to be the first female staff sports reporter at a daily paper. Early in her career, she wore skirts, the only acceptable attire for a woman at the time, as she ran up and down the sidelines of football games. At the Winston-Salem Journal, where she spent much of her 51-year career, she covered all the male sports and also reported on female athletes and games held at historically black colleges and high schools that were ignored by other papers. These news briefs were compiled by Dominique Sogel and Jennifer Thurston. Rita Henley Jensen is the editor-in-chief. Background music is by Joan Hickey. This production of Women's E-News is brought to you by VP Foundation and Yin Radio. This column and more news about women can be found at the Women's E-News website, womensenews.org. For Yin Radio, I'm Sandy Billings.
Heads up!
Are you tired of plain old water? Well, now you don't have to look any further than your own tap for water with a boost. Rocket Water! The Republican Environmental Protection Agency has ruled that it will not rid the extreme amount of rocket fuel chemicals allowed to flow into our nation's water supply. So now every drop of water that shoots from your faucet is extreme! Rocket Water may interfere with thyroid function and pose developmental health threats for babies and fetuses.
Sit back, relax, breathe in. Slowly, there you go. Enjoy the Mike Cannon Show.
Some Republicans are now expressing concern over their vice presidential nominee. Conservative columnist Kathleen Parker, a former Sarah Palin supporter, writes for the National Review Online, quote, "It is increasingly clear that Palin is a problem. She can bow out for personal reasons. Do it for your country." Fellow columnist Catherine Jean Lopez says, quote, "That is not a crazy suggestion. Something's got to change." The Politico newspaper reports that Republican strategist Tony Fabrizio says of Palin's interview with CBS, quote, "You can't continue to have interviews like that and not take on water."
Heads up.
Governor Palin, you had agreed to cooperate with the Troopergate investigation, which is why you weren't subpoenaed. But now you've announced that you refuse to speak with investigators?
That's right, I did, because I learned from the best. Checks and balances are for suckers. Why cooperate with investigators when you can just ignore them? Now, am I right, or am I right, or am I right?
Damn right you're right. You go, girl.
Gonna rise up and take what's there. 'Cause finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution.
This week in radical history for the week starting September 29th. Some audio for this week's show is borrowed from the Radio Roots crew at WBAI in New York. Inspiration and information for the show came from the Slingshot organizer and the Daily Bleed website.
Fight the power! Come on! Yo, check this out, man!
There is something going on in the ether.
The kids are now moving back into the street.
For every Martin they cut down, there must be 100 Martins to step into his shoes. Hey!
This week in radical history for September 29th, 1879. Earlier today, U.S. troops attack a peaceful Ute Indian party while they're working along the Mill River at the reservation run in Colorado's White River Agency. The agency head, Mr. Meeker, frustrated that the Utes would not bow to his wishes to change the form from hunting to farming, so he calls in the army. Before the fighting ends today, 37 Utes die in a desperate stand to save the reservation from military seizure. The Utes' crime, hunting and fishing along the river's edge. Also on September 29, 1906, U.S. sends in the army to Cuba to protect American interests, like protecting the mob run casinos and sex tourism for wealthy Americans. Also on this date in 1921 in Russia, the Cheka Bolshevik secret police execute Vanya Boron and 9 other anarchist prisoners. Trotsky, who ordered the execution, remarks at the time, "We do not imprison the real anarchists, but criminals and bandits who cover themselves by claiming to be anarchists." Emma Goldman would write about the execution of Fannin Brownin. Fannin was a type of Russian woman completely concentrated in the cause of humanity. I find it funny that at the same time in America, the Palmer raids continue to round up anarchists and other radicals, imprison and or deport them. Interesting that two supposedly completely different political systems, communism and capitalism democracy, works towards wiping out anarchists. Why, you might ask? Because the anti-authoritarian philosophy of anarchists is a potent threat to these top-down, chauvinistic, unequal organizing of society. Also on this date in 1936, 11 members of the Detroit Black Legion, a security arm of the Michigan KKK, convicted of the murder of Charles Poley, a WPA organizer. The KKK Black Legion is organized along military lines. The Michigan Legion had 5 brigades, 16 regiments, 64 battalions, 256 companies, and probably numbered between 20,000 and 30,000 members, one-third of whom lived in Detroit. The Legion saw as its enemies not only blacks, Jews, and Catholics, but also welfare workers and recipients, and labor union organizing. It is true that racism rears its ugly head in the southern states. However, Jim Crow laws and anti-black attitudes abound in northern states as well, still to this day. Here's a short segment from Black Agenda Radio.
A recent Associated Press Yahoo survey of racial attitudes found disturbingly high levels of anti-black prejudice among whites of both major political parties and among white independents. One-third of white Democrats displayed negative feelings towards African Americans, as did 40% of all white Americans. Observers of black politics have long known that white polling data is unreliable in elections pitting white candidates against blacks. Consistently, over the space of decades, significant portions of the white electorate have been shown to overstate their willingness to vote for an African American. That is, they lie. Of course, projecting white behavior in the absence of prejudice is the ultimate fantasy, given the foundational role racism has played in American life. But in real life, such voters simply find some other reason to vote against the black candidate, and are therefore never forced to confront their racism. And those reasons are potentially infinite. Between 20 and 30% of whites of all parties associate blacks with the words violent, boastful, and complaining. This is certainly nothing new to Barack Obama, since he's hired the best in-house pollsters that Goldman Sachs money can buy, which may explain why he denounces blacks who complain and paints young black men with the broad brush of irresponsibility, the better to convince whites that he understands or even shares their racial attitudes. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford.
That was an edited version of Black Agenda Radio, which you can find on the net or listen to the Mike Cannon Show, my weekly program that features Black Agenda Radio segments and other indie media radio programming. That's the Mike Cannon Show, which can be found each and every week on radioforall.net.
This is your radio news reporter, Citra Cacate. On this day, September 29th, in 1970, the National Chicano Moratorium was still inspiring many smaller public demonstrations. 1 month earlier, the moratorium carried 30,000 Chicanos across the U.S. to Los Angeles streets in protest of the Vietnam War. These marchers recognized the disproportionate number of dead Chicano soldiers in Vietnam and the government's systematic recruitment of poor people and people of color to fight in the war. When they finally reached Laguna Park in East L.A., waiting for them were hundreds of armed LAPD who began harassing and attacking their peaceful protest. The protesters fought back. Police answered with tear gas and batons, and three Chicano marchers died. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you to never let the past slip away.
Two more items for this week in Radical History for September 29th, 1982. U.S. Marines land in Lebanon to protect American interests. Also on September 29th, 1988, Veterans Peace Convoy wins lawsuit banning executive branch from regulating or prohibiting aid to a foreign country intending to relieve suffering. Though harassed continuously, peace convoys of all kinds make regular runs to Cuba and other humanitarian efforts throughout the world. This week in Radical History for September 30th, only have two items. Showing how much of a democratic, law-abiding nation Israel is, like in 1986 when Vanunu is kidnapped by Israeli secret police in Rome and taken back to Israel. Vanunu, who leaked details of Israel's secret nuclear weapons program to the London Times, was convicted in a secret Israeli military court and held in solitary confinement in Israel prisons for the next 10 years. Also on that date in 1991, CIA-financed military coup in Haiti overthrows a democratically elected government of Aristide. 3 years of protecting U.S. interests follow state-sponsored murder, rape, and theft. Why do we evade so much, you might ask? As poet and owner of the City Lights books once said, our government is a bird of two right wings. They are devoted to perpetuation and spread of corporate capitalism. This week in Radical History for October 1st, 1838, the Trail of Tears. 4,000 Cherokees die when 17,000 of them are forced west by U.S. President Jackson's Indian Removal Act. Also on October 1st, 1851, William Henry, a runaway slave and craftsman from Syracuse, New York, is arrested by U.S. Marshals and scheduled to be returned to slavery. 10,000 citizens of the city storm the sheriff's office, free Henry, and aid his escape to Canada via the Underground Railroad. Also on October 1st, 1860, San Francisco land speculator and self-entitled Norton I, Emperor of the United States and Protector of Mexico, bars Congress from meeting in Washington. Congress meets anyways. Also on this date in 1867, anarchist Fernand Pelletier is born in Paris. Encouraged anarchist participation in trade unions, which was actually revolutionary then, favoring direct action, sabotage, and general strikes, and the rejection of political parties. Quote, we are men without gods, without masters and fatherland, irreconcilable enemies of any despotism, moral or collective laws, dictatorships, and impassioned lovers of the culture of oneself. Lastly, in a state in 1949, Pacific Foundation starts the first radio station, KPFA, in Berkeley, California. Kudos to Pacific Foundation for all their efforts. And happy anniversary. This week in Radical History for October 2nd, only got a couple items. In 1947, radical Native American author and activist Ward Churchill is born. Here's a little bit of Churchill speaking.
You're going to get serious about this and be anti-war. That's kind of like being anti-sky. Is there any particular war or form of war or more substantive content you might be against? My being against it doesn't affect it at all. I'm going to have to actually do something about it. And we need to be talking about what it is we're going to do and how we can do it better than it was done the last time, because I'm old enough to remember the late 60s and the anti-war movement, which is a major chunk of society at the time. And we're right here confronting the reality that we have to do it again, which means we didn't do it right then. Okay? So spare me all the rehashed Dave Dillinger rhetoric from the 1960s, because guess what? That didn't stop the Vietnam War. The Vietnamese stopped the Vietnam War. They won it, and they didn't win it with prayer vigils and mass marches.
Also on October 2nd, 1986, Reagan, who's sure there must be some commie involvement in the anti-apartheid movement, in a rare act of Congress doing the right thing, overrides Reagan's veto and passes the South African sanctions. This week in Radical History for October 3rd.
This is your Radio Roots reporter, Arturo Contreras. On this day, October 3rd in 1909, white American feminist, anarchist, and free love advocate Lois Weisbrooker died at the age of 84. Lois belonged to a small group of women known as the Free Lovers who pursued sexual autonomy and actively challenged society's ideas of sexual respectability. The Free Lovers sought to liberate women from the belief that sex was an all-male terrain. They encouraged women to acknowledge their own sexual desires, to pursue their right to enjoy sex, and not to be ashamed of their own bodies. In their quest to redefine women's sexuality, the Free Lovers stressed the importance of the woman's right to say no, as well as yes. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you, never let the past slip away.
Also on October 3rd, 1932, all 164 students in the Kincaid High School in Illinois walk out on strike after they discover that the school is being heated with coal from a company employing scab labor. Also on October 3rd, folk singer Woody Guthrie dies on this date in New York City at the age of 52 in 1967. He helped transform the folk ballad into a vehicle of social protest and observation. He paved the way for Bob Dylan, Bruce Springsteen, and a host of other folk and rock songwriters who have been moved by the conscience to share experiences and voice opinions in a forthright manner. Here's just one of those singers.
At 11 in the morning, we all heard the factory blow. The blast took out the windows and the shrapnel fell like snow. We could get no help from out of town for half a day or more. We had near 1,000 casualties and beds for 94. And can you keep your head, your backbone, or your heart? We all found out the answer on the day it fell apart. It was worse than combat medicine, supplies were draining fast. Bandages ran out and antiseptics wouldn't last. I took all the able-bodied I could catch inside the door and made them help the doctors or go scrounge supplies and more. I invented laws to tell them, saying in such emergency, forget your usual job and boss, your orders come from me. I sent the cops to commandeer anything in reach, food or disinfectant cloth or alcohol or bleach. And can you keep your head, your backbone or your heart? We all found out the answer on the day it fell apart. The janitor ran cleanup squad, the cook maintained supplies. The garbage man removed the ones who died before our eyes. The clerks burned all our papers to boil water on the fire. For sterilizing instruments as the body count went higher. A local health food herbalist brought everything he had. The painkillers were useful and the poultices weren't bad. A smacking cocaine pusher handed us his whole supply. The quality was lousy, but a few more didn't die. And can you keep your head, your backbone, or your heart? We all found out the answer on the day it fell apart. We did triage in the parking lot, ranked minor, major, grave. A sad-eyed fireman gave the stroke to those we couldn't save. Then sometime in the chaos, a director wandered in to tell us we were breaking rules, what trouble we'd be in. But if we'd swear the factory was not the fire's cause, and the harm was accidental, he'd forget the broken laws. The staff sneaked up and grabbed him and tied him to a door. He gave them blood transfusions till he hadn't any more. Your backbone or your heart? We all found out the answer on the day it fell apart. When that day was over and we'd saved all that we could, we saw that law and politics would hang us where we stood. We'd saved 800 lives but shattered all authority. I told them, people, save yourselves, put all the blame on me. I took my books and instruments and a few supplies beside, packed my car and ran away to open countryside. So now I live an outlaw, condemned by righteous men. But for all the lives I saved that day, I'd do it all again. And can you keep your head, your backbone, or your heart? We all found out the answer on the day it fell apart. Can you keep your head, your backbone, or your heart? You'll all find out the answers on the day it falls apart.
Couple more days with only a couple more items each to finish up this week's show, This Week in Radical History for October 4th. In an attempt to get his mafia friends back to the casinos in Cuba, on this date in 1962, President JFK calls for more CIA covert sabotage against Cuba, known as Operation Mongoose. Also on that date in 1974, ex-CIA agent Philip Agee publishes the names of 37 CIA spies in an effort to undermine the CIA terrorism policies and murdering, kidnapping, torture, assassination, and other crimes against humanity. The U.S. would try to get them extradited back to the United States for years, and would eventually pass a law seeming to aim right at people like Agee. The Intelligent Identities Protection Act was passed, and then directly violated, of course, during the Valerie Plame, Dick Cheney years.
Your Radio Roots reporter, Arturo Contreras. On this day, October 5th, in 1513, Spanish conquistador Vasco Núñez de Balboa ordered the slaughter of 40 transgendered men in the village of Quarecua in modern-day Panama. After Balboa saw that this group of men dressed as women and had sex with other men, he had them torn to pieces by his war dogs. Many pre-conquest civilizations in Latin America practiced homosexuality or gender crossing as a normal part of life. As these nations were colonized by Spain, severe penalties were placed on these behaviors, including public executions and burnings, and eventually homosexuality became stigmatized and feared. The effects of colonization on indigenous people are intense and have uprooted whole value systems and cultures. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you, never let the past slip away.
Lastly, on October 5th, 1987, the Supreme Court refuses to hear Leonard Peltier's appeal in one of the most corrupt trials in recent U.S. history. The FBI vehemently opposes his release. The government still holds 6,000-plus pages in his case, which were refused to release for national security reasons to his defense team. And justice for all. This has been This Week in Radical History, produced out of the Glee Glee Studios. I'd like to thank the Radio Roots crew at WBAI in New York for the audio I borrowed for this show. Also thanks to the Slingshot Organizer and the Daily Bleed website for both information and inspiration for this show. I'll conclude this week's show with a short segment I produced called Bush versus the Anarchist Revolution. Until next week's This Week in Radical History, as always and forever, I'm yours in a struggle, Mike Cannon.
From where Winston stood, it was possible to read, picked out on his white face in elegant lettering, the three slogans of the party. War is peace. Freedom is slavery. Ignorance is strength.
When we talk about war, we're really talking about peace.
War is peace. Freedom is slavery. Ignorance is strength.
I remember how the meaning of words began to change. How unfamiliar words like collateral and rendition became frightening. While things like Northfire and the Articles of Allegiance became powerful. I remember how different it became dangerous. I still don't understand it. Why they hate us so much.
I want this country to realize that we stand on the edge of oblivion. I want every man, woman, and child to understand how close we are to chaos. I want everyone to remember why they need us.
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people. Oh, revolution without dancing is a revolution not worth having.
A reminder of what another anarchist and feminist, Emma Goldman, once said. If voting never really changed anything, they would have made it illegal.
'Cause baby, I'm an anarchist, you're a spy, the slave.
I'm not afraid to help with a fight, and I'm not ashamed about getting drunk, and I don't care what you say, 'cause I believe in anarchy. I'm not afraid, and I'm not ashamed, 'cause I still believe in anarchy, in anarchy, in anarchy.
Here's my boomstick!
The Mike Cannon Show, normally heard Mondays from 2 to 6.
I'm with another gentleman here who's at the anti-Nazi protests. And I
this is Mike Cannon. I'm with Becca, who has returned from Palestine for the fourth time.
I'm with a vendor at the energy fair here who has biodiesel.
This is Mike Cannon. I'm with a group, the RNC Welcoming Committee for the Republican National Convention that's going to be coming up.
Anita's still here, even in Algiers, where a lot of the community businesses aren't open, and it's 100 times fold that in huge swaths of this town, like in the 9th Ward, where almost nobody's back because there's no infrastructure set up there. So
stay current. Listen to the Mike Cannon Show.
And you too can stay current by checking out the Mike Cannon Indie Media Radio Show, normally heard every Monday from 2 to 6 p.m. on this, your only not-for-profit, commercial-free community radio station, 93.3 WNRB LP Wausau. Free people, free radio.